Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
So let's start off. Just, do you want to, hello, welcome. Great to be seeing you, talking to you.
Thank you, Scott.
Do you want to just start off and give a little overview of like the scope of what you consider your creative practice and the things that you do?
Yeah, because is the title of this songwriting specifically, or
no? The title of this podcast is Sustainable Creativity.
Okay, great.
Yes, so we're kind of covering like the big picture of like how have you been able to maintain, you know, an active creative practice over probably more than 20 years, I'm assuming.
Well, I view it as like a lot of them are like chunks of things I'll do for a 10, 15 year chunk of time that kind of, okay. So we know a lot of people in common through the music world of the Bay Area, which I was very heavily involved in as a musician, as a promoter, as a journalist at certain points, and then working in record labels. And then our coworkers at another company that is a music streaming media company. And I also started doing stand-up maybe like 12 years ago, you know, around 2010, 2011. Started doing stand-up comedy, sort of something I'd been interested in for a long time. I don't know what my practice is at this point. I've kind of done a lot of different things, and I found that they weren't sustainable, which is why I have a job now. But I tried a lot of different things to make them sustainable, and then found that those sort of skills, I think, are transferable to the kind of work I do now, which is sort of like essentially being like, I think my title is like, I'm a curator, but I'm like kind of like a metadata librarian. Without having an MLIS degree, I've kind of just stumbled into this. Just like, I know a little bit about a lot of things, and then I'm good at identifying when things are a problem. That's essentially, I think, that's the through line to my comedy and my work life, is identifying when there's a problem. But like, as far as my creative practice, I don't know. I really enjoyed doing music, and then I found that like, the at the point where I was trying to be in a band and do comedy at the same time, I just found comedy more rewarding. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of like fell off. But like, yeah, my roots are very much in music, but I'm just like not creating music right now. But I am like started putting out records again. So I'm like enabling other people's music. So I kind of view that as a piece of it.
Right. So a bunch of questions for you to follow
up. Okay,
so let's start with the last, which is, you say that the kind of the transition into comedy because it was more rewarding. Rewarding in what way? What do you mean by rewarding?
I was doing maybe 1.5 bands at the time. I stopped really playing in bands, and one of the bands like barely did anything, but we were like, you know, theoretically we had never broken up. I guess theoretically we still haven't actually broken up, which was Chen Santa Maria, which is like the sort of improvised electronics, for the lack of a better term, like without, you know, noise band, mm-hmm. which I did with Steve Santa Maria. And so we never really broke up, but the last time we played live was 2014. And then the other band I was in was Common Eider, King Eider, which I had been in kind of, it was like, it would go through waves of activity, but I was in it in 2008. And then I think in 2013 or 2014, I just basically hadn't talked to them in a little bit. And then it would be this thing where then I didn't, you know, Rob Fisk, it was his band. It's still his band. He does it still. He's in Berlin now. But it'd be the thing, like, I wouldn't hear from him for like 4 months. And then he's like, hey, I booked like 5 shows in August. And this is like May. And he's like, can you practice every Wednesday to do these? And also the record's done. And like, so I'm not on the record and I didn't do any songwriting. And you want me to practice every week. And like, I kind of was at this point where I'm like, man, I do like this band and I like things about it, but I also found like myself being like, okay, every Wednesday I have to do this instead of going to an open mic and I'm air quoting now, honing my craft. And the irony of that is, like, I think shortly after I left that band, they started like booking all these tours in Europe, and I'm just like, well, that sounds about right. That's about right for me. Yeah.
But so you were kind of running into the like fatigue of being in a band, and you were having and it was more rewarding to do stand up in that you were just, you had more autonomy, you had more more fun, more ease.
I'd say in bands I've been in, it's like you get the attention of the audience is divided 3 to 4 ways. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, oh, I get all the attention in this scenario. And I liked it then. Now I'm like afraid of it. But yeah, like it was just like the part of what I liked about music was writing. Part about it I liked about music was performing. And then sort of like weirdly like doing a lot of the admin aspects of being in a band, which is like doing PR, like, you know, talking to labels, like booking shows, like, and I'm like, I don't know if I'm good at the admin part of it or just I've always been the one that's the most interested in doing the admin aspect of it. But that is kind of like related to other jobs I've had and stuff. It kind of came out of that, like doing PR mm-hmm. and things like that. So yeah, I just found like, A, the band situations I was in were not super active. The things that I liked about, like I liked performing and I was getting all of that in stand-up.
Right.
Like you get kind of writing and performing both and,
yeah.
You know, self-analyzing if you want, you know, to look at your material in the same way. But with bands, it was like, okay, I'm not in charge and I have very little say in even like what I'm going to be doing. And I don't know if this is like, I feel like I'm going to invest in like myself. Mm-hmm. And a lot of like what I was doing around the beginning of like the early 2010s was like, I'm just like, I need to take all these admin skills I have and apply them to myself and like my own like brand, for lack of a better term.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I also just want to kind of roll back and you sort of referenced sustainability with creative practice in the context of making a living, but I want to clarify that like I'm talking about kind of the greater picture of like just being able to sustain a creative practice, whether you're getting paid for it or not.
Sure. I'm being literal about it.
Well, no, but maybe that's part of your definition of sustainability is like are those things wrapped up for you where like if you're not making money at it, is it hard to maintain the practice?
I will say like I've kind of flipped on my whole thought about a lot of this stuff in the last few years at the point where I now am on a salary and no longer an hourly employee. I think I did spend a lot of time in my late 20s, early 30s trying to like figure out, like I viewed it as like kind of like a game, or I guess the capitalism game. Like a little bit of a game of like, how do I, and this is before Patreon existed, I basically was like, what if there was a way I could get the handful of people that care about what I do to give me money every month or year to do the things that I, which was be like a subscription service or something. Like, it's like, I think I do like four or five different things well, but I don't know. I haven't asked for money for a lot of these things, and I haven't like known how much to charge or have like the mentality that I should charge. And then a thing I was doing that should have made money, I never took any money, which was promoting shows. Like I'd never really, I basically was like, I have a job. I view this as like kind of community service in a weird way. Right. But then like I was hitting a point in 2010 where I had like spent a lot of my own money to go on a tour of Europe and, you know, taken a leave from my work and then returned home and been like, I have very little money to live off right now. And, but I just kind of had this extravagant vacation that didn't really pay for itself.
Like an art vacation.
Art vacation. And I'm just like, okay, like in my mind, that was like a goal, like to do, like I'd been to the UK one time and never really done a Europe tour. I'm like, I did like two Europe tours in like 6 weeks with two different acts and with a lot of downtime in between shows. I'm just like, I don't know how to do this in a way that makes sense other than as like an art vacation, right? Like I'm like, I'm not like selling merch. I'm not selling records. I'm not like, I'm spending money on the days off, like, you know, just eating or like having to sleep somewhere. So it was like, I think this is what I liked. Also, this is the first time I've been gone for that long. So I'm just like, oh man, if I get better at what I'm trying to do, does this mean more of this? Like just not being home, like, you know, eating a lot of cheese and hummus. And like, that's even better. And it's better in Europe than it is in America. That's the thing that's fucked up about it. I'm like, Europe's not great, but it's like, it's still better than like American DIY touring. It's so insane.
Oh yeah.
And I don't know that it's improved in the last 10 years. But like I had gotten to this point where like I had a band that was like active enough that we could be touring like UK, Europe once in a while. And even if we weren't prayed out new records, there was still like occasionally someone would be like, come do a thing. That band broke up around the same time I was really starting to get into comedy. And so then basically I was in like four active bands. Then I was down to being in like one and a half bands. And then I quit my job and then did a bunch of poor decisions in general. And then I was just like, I'm going to take unemployment and spend a year just really trying to become mm-hmm. a good comedian, mm-hmm. which is not advisable. You don't need to quit your job to do that. But I just was like trying to land in a better place in terms of like career or, you know, things that I thought were maybe going to lead to more in terms of that direction. Like I didn't really know. And also being in the Bay Area, I was like, I didn't even know like what you could attain or what right. you could aspire to in terms of comedy. It's like there's two clubs that are owned by Live Nation, and you kind of just basically have to like suck up to that world,
right.
which I ended up not even succeeding at doing before I moved to LA. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, I should just to throw another random thing in there. I randomly booked an acting part in like 2014. So then in 2015, I was just like, oh, there's acting work in the Bay Area.
Right.
Very little and non-union work, but I stumbled into some of it. And then I was just like, I'll be able to do all these things when I move to LA. And then realizing like, yeah, the trick of it is in the Bay Area, they want people like me to be in things because people that look like me have real jobs. Uh-huh. I could pretend to have those real jobs. But I'm like, oh, so it was a little bit in demand as like a guy in an office in like web commercials in the Bay Area. But mm-hmm. down here, I'm like, oh, there's way more of me down here.
Right. So that was going to be another question I had for you was like, when you kind of give a rundown of what you do, you didn't mention acting or podcasting.
Oh yeah. Cause I haven't done a podcast in 2 months.
But you have been doing podcasts for years and years.
For years I've been doing it.
Right.
And then acting is relatively new. And in a weird way, I don't view it as like a This will probably come back to bite me in the ass one day if I'm just like, he doesn't take it seriously. I'm like, I mean, I think it's not like a craft that I've really invested myself in as much as it's been sort of like an outgrowth of comedy. Mm-hmm. But like, it is actually the most remunerative, mm-hmm. one of those words, uh-huh. thing that I've done. Actually, out of everything I've ever done, I'm like, that is like actually the best pay rate of anything, right. I generally do.
Sure. Yeah.
So I'm like, I'm kind of like still like want to be in the game, but I even like talked to someone recently who's been in it in LA for a long time about like, should I take like an acting class? And she was like, are you trying to be like Daniel Day-Lewis? I'm like, not really. She's like, then I wouldn't bother. Like, I'm like, you're trying to be like a guy who's like, has a wacky neighbor role on a sitcom, right? You don't need to like, I mean, I probably do need to like take some kind of class just to like know how to memorize lines. But I don't view that as really a key part of my creative practice.
Okay. But right. But it's in there in the mix, but maybe as like a supplemental kind of thing or an outgrowth of other work.
I mean, I love TV, film and stuff. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I would love to do more work in that world. And I, you know, if it came up, I'd like to get good at it, but it's just also the reality of like, you know, I'm a middle-aged, bald Chinese American man. And there's not like, if I decided to dedicate my life to like being like the Dustin Hoffman of Asian bald middle-aged men, I don't know if that's going to pay off. I don't even know if that's a good person to use anymore as a reference. But yeah.
Right, right.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
So let's roll back to like when you first got into making stuff, for lack of a better term, creative life. Mm-hmm. I mean, can you give a little idea of like how old were you, what you got into, and what you imagined your creative life was going to look like?
Yeah. As a young child, the thing that I did the most that got me the most praise or attention or validation was drawing. And that's actually sort of the path I think I thought that's what I wanted to do. As a young kid, I was like, yo, like there's this guy, Jim Davis. He made this character named Garfield, or even just like political cartoons. Like I would just like kind of copy political cartoons without understanding what the political take or joke was. I'd be like, I'm going to draw this version of this caricature. Like I was like kind of like thinking that that was a valid route to go, which I could have been. I mean, someone I grew up with is a very successful comics person now. And like, I know a lot of comics people and that's kind of still a big interest of mine. But I kind of pivoted out of that into like doing writing and doing fanzines. So I was doing kind of like a lot of the work I was doing. I would say like there's a third to a half of what I do is not generative creative work, but like supportive in some way. It's like supportive or tertiary, like it's sort of like criticism or reference to other things. And in a weird way, I kind of feel like a lot of my comedy is also like essentially like cultural criticism. But yeah, I think there was like a huge part of that. I don't know, some of that might have come from college or like, you know, going to school, where I went to school and taking the kind of classes I was taking, which is like American studies at Berkeley. Like it was just like very much like culture criticism. Just, you know, which is kind of, I don't know. I feel like it's sort of the predecessor for Twitter, right? It's kind of like, it's like me doing Medium posts of like as school. Like it's just like, what's problematic about this? Like I learned that very early on. That's which basically is, what college is for me, is like, what's problematic about this thing?
Like a educated way of saying, like the Jerry Seinfeld, like, what's the deal with?
I mean, to be straight up, like in terms of like a thing I got out of college, like I had this folklore class, which was, I'm like, he would do that. He would sit there and like break down jokes. Like this guy, Alan Dundies, he's like in the anthropology department at Berkeley. And it was like, he would like literally do like observational comedy as like anthropology. And like, oh, that's straight up it. Like he's commenting on jokes as a format. And also what he's doing is observational comedy at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, just like breaking down. Or just like looking, he'd be like, look at like a George Carlin bit or something and be like, this is what this is about. It's very Freudian. It's like about this. And like, and I was like that, between that and the stuff we were doing, like looking at like film and television, I was just like very much in this zone of like, yeah. And I was kind of like the right age where like, I didn't have the internet in high school, but I did have the internet in college. And I was like, kind of like, coming of age with the internet in this way, mm-hmm. of like these things that you can aspire to, like we're starting to become thing. Like when I think about, like I was trying to explain that, like the job I have now, I could not explain that to myself at 18. Like no, what is this job? Like what is the thing that you do? Well, it's audio on computers that's like radio, but then it's also, you don't have to go in an office. I'm like, what? You know, that's all, everything I would have wanted when I was like 15. So in a weird way, it's like, yeah, like I'm just like, how would I have even explained that to myself as a guy? I can't explain it to my mom now. Yeah. I still try to explain to her like what I do. And she's just like, so you guys buying a lot of companies? What are you guys doing? I'm like, yeah. That's too inside baseball maybe for this audience. But like, well, I will assume they know you and but yeah. So what was the question? Okay. Like my original thing that I got into creatively, like, origin point,
kind of a creative origin point, but also like, what did you imagine it would mean to have a creative life, like to have a creative practice over time? Or is that even something that you were thinking about when you were like 18, 20? Were you like, I know I want to make something. You were getting into music and you were like, what was the image of that? Was it like, I want to be a rock star? Was it, I just want to like have a musical life, you know?
I thought, and the kind of the angles I was looking at it was, I was not really a musician through most of high school and college. But I was like sort of in these, like I said, supportive ancillary mm-hmm. kind of positions. Like I would book the free concerts on the campus.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like kind of like in my own mind, like doing some kind of A&R kind of thing. Right.
Mm-hmm. Did you feel like that was, that in and of itself was a kind of creative work? Or did you feel like I'm just helping people who are artists?
I did feel like it was creative. I felt like I was doing some kind of active curating without mm-hmm. having that terminology for right. it. I don't know that, like, I hadn't thought about it in terms of a career or necessarily like making money. I just knew I spent more time doing that than I did like studying mm-hmm. my classes.
Right.
Like, and I think people that do college radio kind of get that as well. I weirdly like did not do the college radio station, but I was sort of doing everything that was like kind of equivalent to that kind of thing.
Right.
So Yeah, like, I guess it's like, yeah, do you consider a DJ, being a DJ, a creative practice? It sort of is, sort of isn't, right? It's sort of mostly selection curatorial, but essentially that can become a job if you want it to, or you figure out the right way to angle it, you can make it a job.
Right. Well, job and creative practice are not necessarily interchangeable.
I'm starting
to get a thread. Were you putting a lot of pressure on like making whatever creative work you did a career?
I will say, because of my background, which is, you know, a child of immigrants who typically, you know, a lot of my peers, it's sort of like there is these expectations, like you're going to go to a good school, or you're going to become some kind of professional. And I had sort of like, you know, not fallen off that line, or like been basically like, look, it's not going to be that way for me. Like, we all kind of understand that. So what is the closest thing to that that feels right? And like, right. I had a lot of weird hangups. Like, I didn't really want to call myself an artist. I didn't really think of myself as an artist in those ways. Or maybe because I thought it was a little pretentious, or because there was some like hangup I had about it. And whereas like in retrospect, I'm like, if I had just like pivoted hard into being like, hey, send me to an art school instead, like the things probably would have worked out slightly differently. And like, maybe I would just go do this creative stuff as a wholehearted thing. It was always a little bit of like, well, you're not gonna make a living doing this. But then instead of me thinking of an alternative, I just couldn't think of a way to make a living doing anything. I literally was like, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing at all. And I just know my rent is this much, and I just need to figure out some way to keep doing the stuff I'm interested in, and, you know, keep a roof over my head, and, you know, figure it out. Like, I kind of started playing in bands a little bit, like maybe I was like 23, 24, a bit more. And then by the time I was like 25, I kind of felt like I was having my first band. What's like, a lot of people have that when they're 18 already. So I always felt like I was like a little bit behind in terms of what I was doing. That whole time I was also doing like the curatorial type of stuff, like editing a zine. And I started getting into freelance writing around that time as well. So I did some writing for like some alt weeklies, and, you know, occasionally something for spin.com, which was like a super like shot in the dark thing. I just like wrote them through a friend, and they're like, yeah, sure. The first time I sent them something, they were just like, okay, so you didn't go to journalism school. These are all the things you need to do. You can't just full of red lines, you know, if it was over an email, but yeah.
And all that time you were also organizing, or you had been since college, and curating and
promoting. I did a lot of that, where it was like, I didn't think of it. It just was a thing I started doing, and I didn't really have a plan with it. It just was a thing I started doing. And it was like almost like reality of just being like, oh, people need this, and they like that I do it, and I'm a people pleaser, so I'll keep doing it, essentially. That's kind of a lot of the root of it, yeah.
But you clearly must enjoy some part of it, or at least find some benefit of it, to still be doing it.
Yeah,
or
I mean,
I've been doing it for so long.
I would say, like, I kind of started up again doing that during the pandemic. Basically, I wasn't doing like live performance anymore, and I'd already kind of been talking about doing some record projects, and being at the point where I'm like, oh, I could actually do this, and it's not gonna like I can take some risks financially about some of these things, and as long as I enjoy the end product, I'm not gonna feel like it was a failure if I didn't, you know, make a grip of money on it, right? It's just like the stability of the day job sort of allows me to be a little bit more, I don't know, one could say frivolous, but I'll just say, you know, free about what kind of, I'm like, as hobbies go, mm-hmm. you know, some people get into microbrewing. I'm like, mm-hmm. I'm kind of doing that.
Right.
It's microbrewing, but it's like promoting other people's, fermenting other people, I guess. I don't know the right terminology.
No, that's a good,
like a hobby. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you sort of view that part of it as a hobby, would you use the same terminology in terms of talking about like your own work? Or like, does having the day job allow you to remove some of the pressure of your creative work almost so that you can have a almost hobby like relationship to it?
And I think like, maybe that's what I was trying to get at. Like in my 20s and 30s, I was like, this has to be a career, or this has to be sustainable in terms, like I was probably living in a way that was not generally sustainable. Like when I was like so involved in music that like my day job was working at a record label, I was playing in four bands, mm-hmm. I was going out 5 times a week. I was not in any relationships or dating at all. Mm-hmm. And I was also putting out my own records and putting out other people's records. And like, so my social life, my business life, my you know, creative life, all of those things were so like tied to like what I thought music was. And like, so like there's so many aspects to music, right? But like, it was all, I was like so in it that like, it probably couldn't have kept going that way unless mm-hmm. I just was still living in the same apartment.
Right.
You know, for 20 years.
Right.
And then I kind of like, when I started doing more comedy, I kind of almost did like a whole 180 of like, then comedy, I got my job because of comedy. I was booking a venue that was a comedy venue. I was performing comedy, putting on shows, like kind of trying to like do all the parts of the pit, you know, all the parts mm-hmm. of the buffalo, right? Of
right.
Comedy.
Right.
Just trying to like absorb as much of every aspect of it as I could. And then I realized at a certain point, maybe that's not sustainable either. And now I'm like mm-hmm. at the sort of point where I'm like, I do stand up sometimes. The record stuff is like a thing that I enjoy doing that I'd like to figure out how to be better at. And it's just like, look, I've been doing this kind of through before downloads and after downloads. So I just kind of like want to like see what happens. Mm-hmm. And I feel like because I never went whole hog into it at a certain point, like when like, you know, CDs were like people were trying to make a living selling CDs or anything, I don't have that baggage. Mm-hmm. So it's being like a little bit of a nimbler thing and being like, wow, it's surprising that I started doing this thing in the 90s and like I'm now doing a showcase at Noise Pop. And then like friends of mine that had full-on legit labels with employees just had to like shrivel up like and die like 9 years ago. So
right,
it's this weird thing of like, God, I kind of wanted to like, you know, what are the bugs that like they can like get, or frogs or bugs where they dry out and they revive later.
Uh-huh. Waters come. Right.
I was kind of much like, okay, if you're small enough, you right. can outlast some of these bigger
yeah.
changes than if you were like all in, like I rely on my income from this.
Mm-hmm.
So right. I know that you're talking, okay, so I'm going to try to like get, I know I'm getting like more like about like, and it maybe seems crass to be like it, like making a living off something or money off.
No, I don't mean to imply that it's crass at all. In fact, I'm just curious like how different people conceive of you know, what makes something sustainable and mm-hmm. what they need for something right. to be sustainable. And so one of the things that I kind of heard you talking about there was how going like all in 360 maybe wasn't a totally sustainable thing for you, and that there is maybe a burnout factor or just yeah. like, or even burnout aside, like that it didn't allow for like other possibilities of like, of survival or something. Like if this one thing didn't work, then the mm-hmm. whole thing collapsed. But yeah, I mean, if you know, sustainability is intertwined with financial health, like that certainly makes sense.
Or like, yeah, like I think of it like, you know, there's a lot of areas of being a well-rounded person that also need to happen. And like, I think I've been really evaluating during this whole last 2 years too. It's been like, I'm like, why do I want certain things, or what is driving certain things? And like
really, what, for example,
like, okay, the, like, do I want to perform purely, it's about like my ego gratification somehow, and being like, okay, well, is that healthy, or is that a good reason to do these things? And then just really having to evaluate that kind of thing. And I haven't really landed on a for sure like thing about it, because it's like, I think creative people do have egos, right? Like, uh-huh. You kind of do need to have some ego to be like, otherwise you're like, well, no one wants to hear what I have to say, right? And even like in the last year and a half, like everything that's all the stuff that's been happening, including like, you know, like the like, you know, racial justice stuff and stuff, it's just like, I'm like, and being around like a lot of people being like I don't know whether I should say anything or not because I'm white. I'm like, well, I'm not white, but I also don't know whether I should say anything. And like those aspects of things coming out too, it's just like, are we taking up too much space? Are people that like how do, like, is it a zero-sum game, or like how do we give space to other people and then still like do stuff that like we want to do? Because like most of the stuff I want to do is not for the social good, it's purely like something to entertain myself, you know. So I have not figured it out at all, but I was thinking about it, like maybe there's things that drive me to do certain performance, and it's like, that's really more about like, it's really just something for me to figure out for myself, like as a person, and not like to put on an audience, right? And like my relationship to audiences did change a lot. Like basically when I was doing the kind of music I was doing, there was kind of always this this little out you could use of like, well, they just don't get it, mm-hmm. right? And then I was in a genre where it's like, oh, if they don't get it, it's not the thing. Like, it's not comedy if they don't get it,
right?
Like, if it's not funny, it doesn't work. Right. It relies on an audience reaction. And I kind of was like, a lot of the stuff I did a lot of music. I wouldn't say I did funny music, but I did a lot of stuff that was like messing with audiences or kind of trolling them. Mm-hmm. And then I realized at a certain point, it's like, unless I do that, or like what is it? The inspiration to do comedy was that the whole time. And then when I'm trying to do comedy, it's like, oh, I actually totally some comedians are like good about being like, I know this is funny, fuck them if they don't get it. But mm-hmm. I'm not there yet. I'm still just like, well, if it doesn't work, then I'm doing spoken word. I'm doing poetry stuff. I don't know what's happening. So I'm still at the point where I'm like, I need it to do that.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I wish I could be more like, have the confidence or like the, you know, the Kaufman quality to just be like, yeah, I'm doing something that's none of you understand, and that's fine. I'm like, no, I'm kind of like, I am trying to do the most populist thing mm-hmm. that is in my wheelhouse of things that I do. Like, I mean, like, I don't expect people to like, most people to like a 40-minute like drone piece,
right?
You know, like right. That's, you know, that you're targeting people have to just buy into that.
Mm-hmm.
And then for comedy to work, it in the most commercial, and again, maybe this is, I'm really digging into like this commerce thing. I didn't really think about it so much, but like there's sort of like different ideas about comedy. There's some people that think like for comedy, it's like, you know, you have to be able to play every room, right? Mm-hmm. You can't just right. be a club comic or an alt comic. You have to be able to do both things. And it's like, I've spent a lot of time just being in the alt world or the weirdo world. And
right.
It's like, to me, it would be validating to be like, oh, I can be at a club and people, I'll make a joke that, like, I'll still make the jokes that I want to make is like bonus jokes or whatever. But like, I think the role or the job is different, right? It's
interesting.
There's a achievable goal for comedy. And I feel like even with like the best music, it's like, is there an achievable goal? Or it's just like you did the thing that you set out to do. And that's whether people got it or not is irrelevant, right? Like, I kind of feel like maybe all of it is.
I don't know. I mean, Taylor Swift seems to, you know, like be able to like play all those rooms, right, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a really interesting point. I mean, I hate to say like one is art and one is entertainment, and maybe comedy has this expectation that it, you know, has to be entertainment first or something like that, and music has the freedom to be either or. But I don't know that I like stand by those terms.
Okay. Yeah. No, I'm maybe creating more of a binary, but I mean, coming from where I'm coming from, like it was a bit of a change in attitude.
Sure. I mean,
to how I relate to an audience.
Yeah. And this was something I kind of wanted to ask about, because, you know, you talked about like early on, Matt, trying to think about like putting your creative work in the context of a sustainable career, but you've also like made aesthetic choices in a lot of the work that you do that removes it from the commercial, like almost, you know, as far from the commercial realm as possible. Yeah. Right.
Yes, so,
like, especially
yes.
with music,
yes.
but I would, you know, like your comedy yes. too is certainly yes. not like Johnny Carson Tonight Show style comedy.
Sure. I put out a record that is like different noise musicians remixing
right.
my talking and
exactly
crowd sounds, and it's like I like the idea of it, and I like the execution of most of it,
but it's not like Flight of the Conchords or something.
It is not. It is more like sound poetry,
right?
Or like what I was thinking about a lot was sound poetry. And weirdly, like Jeff Foxworthy has like music tracks on his records.
Like, sound
I literally
like yours.
Thought of that. It's like Jeff Foxworthy. There's like these songs that are like tags at the end of Jeff Foxworthy albums, which is just like it's like a country song.
Sure.
And then they'll just throw in like little sound bites of like here, you know, here's oh that's Ron White. I was gonna say here's your sign. I think that's Ron White. Wait, is that Jeff Foxworthy? Well, like you might be a redneck, right? Like just like little Jeff Foxworthy isms.
Right.
Like, oh, but that's like that makes sense. Like that's the culture he's from. Country music culture.
Right.
They also like the country music people like his comedy and they like country music, therefore that. And I'm like,
right.
Oh, the people that know me from all this noise stuff I used to do like noise music.
Right.
And they may not like the comedy, but they might like the interpretation of the comedy as noise music. And like that is kind of like my culture as much as country music is Jeff Foxworthy's culture.
Totally.
Right.
Yeah.
So that I'm just like, I know it's a smaller subset of people.
A little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's why it came out on a cassette.
You know? Yeah. No, I mean, I'm not critiquing your aesthetic choices. I'm just questioning the, you know, the
commercial thought.
I'm just, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, I graduated, you know, at like 22 from college thinking that I was going to go on to have like hoping and, mm-hmm. and like deluded into thinking that I was going to go on to have like my financial career was also going to be playing avant-garde music, you know? And I believed that, and I'm like,
right.
I'll like play European festivals and I'll get grants. And I'm
and
like,
what was your rent when you're 22? It's like,
yeah, I mean, you know, and right. And like you were kind of saying, like, maybe if I had never grown out of that $300 like mission apartment.
Yeah.
And right, and never like had a relationship or a family or like owned anything, owned a car, you know, less than 20 years old, then like maybe I could have made that work. Maybe.
If you could also get on SSI.
Right. And if I could have like gotten some incredibly lucky breaks.
Right.
And, you know, and that's a whole other question. Because there are, like, I have some peers that I started with at the same time and they just like did it and just like, you know, like never wavered.
We all know those people.
And they like, they're not rich, but they're, you know, getting written about in the New Yorker or are touring Europe or whatever. And God bless them, and they deserve it. And there's no, you know.
Yeah.
But, and maybe the issue is more that I just had other things I wanted to do also.
Right, because you got a writing degree.
Yeah, I mean, like, I made avant-garde music for a long time, and then I started making rock music, and then I started, I got a degree in writing. And so I've done a lot. I've switched instruments. I've switched styles. I've, you know. Well, switch mediums.
That's my question for you. Did you think going from avant-garde to rock was going to be a little bit financially better?
Maybe not financially better, but like audience. I did think that there would be more audience, but as a friend pointed out, he's like, you went from making the most accessible avant-garde music to making the least accessible rock music.
Sure.
So that was at that time. But and I do think that in some ways, there were certainly more opportunities. There were if nothing else, there were more places to play. But
I've kind of thought about it in a reverse way as well, because I was like at a point where I was doing like a lot of like, you know, fairly pop for being, you know, underground music. And I was like, do I need to go to Mills? I like literally had this thought of like, I'm seeing other people getting stuff that I would like to get, but what are, I like weighing those things out, right? Like, cause on one hand it's like what you're saying, like there's a way you're more tapped into like the culture when you're in a more populist form. Right. And then you get to a point where like, you're like in your 30s and you're just like, prestige is nice too, or something prestigious would be nice. Like literally being like, you know, I guess I can say it here. Cause like, I've literally been thinking about this thing of like, when like, you know, people get like arts residencies and stuff. Mm-hmm. And like, it's a point now where like certain comedians get arts residencies, right? And I'm like, is that the way to go? Like, and then am I just doing this because I don't have a better idea, or I just have seen someone else do it? And like, well, that's a lot of stuff you do because you see other people do it, right? Like,
right.
I'm sure like, even like touring Europe, it's like my friends are touring Europe. I guess I should tour Europe, you know, like to a degree. Well, I guess that goes back to what I was saying about like in this last period of evaluation being like, why do I want certain things? Like, is it kind of a FOMO thing, or is it pure? Like, I'm now at this point where I'm like, going back to the original thing, like I like drawing and I do a lot more drawing just because I enjoy doing the drawing. And it's like, oh, it doesn't have to be for a thing, but you know, the way my brain works, I'm also like, I guess I could make this into like a t-shirt or something. Like, you know, I still have like a little bit of that, but mostly it's like, it's mostly a thing where I'm like, or cooking, right? Like I like to cook now,
right?
And I take pride in the cooking and then it goes away. Right. And then like that, maybe that feels to me like maybe more things really are like that, because even like the idea of like, you know, hey, the earth is like pretty fucked. Like, what's gonna be left? Like there's gonna be a pile of plastic that I made in my life. And then I'm like maybe my friends that all got into food 20 years ago, I didn't get it. And I was just like, I'd rather put out records than make food. And now I'm like, fuck, maybe I should have been making food this whole time.
Right. Well, so like it sounds like you don't consider making food or even drawing part of your creative practice.
I consider drawing kind of part of my creative practice, but food making, I feel like if I try to make it part of my creative practice the way I have traditionally, that means I'm opening a taco stand and then like losing my shirt. So
right,
I'm like,
right,
don't do that with this. Just do a thing that you like to do to have a good experience, and then let us never speak of it again. Right. Like that's how I do food now. Yeah.
And you're starting to apply that same mindset, are you saying, to some of your other creative work? Or have that same attitude?
I'm like thinking about scale. I'm thinking like I'm at a point where I'm like, a lot of the things I do kind of work as hobbies. And I hated saying hobby before because I felt like it meant like you're not taking it seriously, mm-hmm, or you're not like, it just felt diminutive, right? Like, cause I was like, right, you know, something like my mom would say like, so you're gonna go travel to North Carolina for your hobby? I'm like, no, mom, is what I do. Right. Like, I'm like, right, still having that kind of argument inside of myself about it. Like, I'm like, right, is this what I do? I think like, yeah, like just thinking like, I just keep doing stuff without having real goals, to be honest. Like a lot of the stuff I do doesn't have like real concrete goals.
Mm-hmm.
It's just now it's like the goal for me as a comic has like definitely scaled down from, mm-hmm, what I thought it, when you start and you think you're going to be like, again, like as much of a delusion as, and we can have when they're like 23 and want to be in a band, like I was having it like, you know, 38, mm-hmm, like I'm going to move to LA and like, sure, break into show business as a middle-aged man. So, but like, I don't know. It was a lot sadder a couple years ago when it wasn't working out so well. And then I was like, also like, well, I kind of moved here to do this. And now it's like, oh, I kind of moved to LA to get better at my day job, weirdly. And then now as a result, I have more bandwidth to do kind of these creative pursuits that are not the way I pay my rent. And, mm-hmm, I don't know, maybe I'm really hung up on this whole like immigrant thing of like everything you do has to make money, right? Like that's the and it's kind of like a bummer. I really internalized it, I guess. And I'm like, really, I haven't been thinking about it too much. And then this conversation is making me think about it more. Because it's really like, I never really bought into it. But now as I get older, I'm like, I was like not thinking about, I wasn't even thinking about like, what am I going to do when I'm 40? I had no like real thought about it, you, mm-hmm, know, until I was like, oh, I'm 39. Oh shit. You know? So like things like that, like I'm just the way, like, I don't own a home or anything. I don't have a car right now, but like, I'm like fine. Mm-hmm. And like, I guess I'm thinking to myself sometimes, even like, do I want to play music again? Even like, is that something I want to do? Like I did a cover band. That's like, you get the fun of performing and you get the camaraderie of being in a band, but you don't have to create anything.
Right. There's no
pressure.
It's
this weird thing. Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, do I, maybe I'm just getting to the point where I'm like, I need to figure out what I'm good at. Cause I've done so much random stuff, mm-hmm, where I'm like, I thought I was a good writer, but then I was like, I can't write for a living because it takes forever to get paid and it takes a lot out of me and I'm very slow. Mm-hmm. And so I just can't do this for a living. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of gave up on that. And then randomly out of nowhere, someone asked me to write something like 2 weeks ago. So I'm like, all right, I guess I'm writing again. Mm-hmm. I'm like, it's kind of like, even the way I handled like being in four bands, it was like, what band needs the most attention right now? It's like, it was like this crop circle thing,
mm-hmm,
right? I'm like, okay, in April this band has to go on tour, in summer this band has to record something, in, you know, this band will just occasionally do something now and then. And it was right, like, I was never like firing on all cylinders on one of my bands,
right,
like wholeheartedly. And like, I feel like maybe, you know, it would have been cool to see what happens if I had done that. And that's kind of what I'm trying to do. Like, even like with doing a label now, it's like, there was times I had more time to put into stuff like this. And now I have more money to put into stuff like this. So it's like, let's see if we can balance those out and like, be like, hey, what would this look like if it was more, it could be more of its own, if it's of its own thing that's meant to be, right? Uh-huh. Like, that's kind of a thought I'm having around that stuff. So that's kind of what that is. It's almost like, you know, whatever fantasy I had about what it was going to be, I have in the best position to like play that out more. And then like my ego about my own bands getting passed over for things is like out of the equation. Cause I'm like, I'm not creating this music anymore. I'm facilitating other people's stuff. And right. I think I'm good at doing that. So I'm going to like do that on the side. Right. And so, yeah, I don't know. Have I sustained anything? It's hard to say. It's like sustainability. I would say like I'm in a total writer's block for comedy right now. So I don't feel like, I feel like something major has to shift there mm-hmm. for me to get out of the rut. And again, like it's like a thing of like, I have some stuff I can perform and feel like good about performing. I'm not generating a lot of stuff right now. So, or like I generate stuff and I feel kind of like, ugh, I feel not great about it.
Mm-hmm. But you do power through and keep at it?
Yeah, I mean, I did a show. I hadn't done a stand-up set. Like I'd done this performance stuff. I do this character now, which is like a clown essentially. But I did a stand-up set where I'm like, oh, I have to talk and talk about my life and make people laugh. And I put a lot of pressure on myself and I went to a bunch of shitty open mics to do it. Mm-hmm. And then I did the show. I'm just like, there were more people at the open mics. I don't know why I put all this pressure on myself. And I'm like, but I did it. I'm like, yeah, I did it. And then I put that down. And that was just like, I told myself I wasn't going to watch The Wire until I did this set. And now I'm just like, it's like, I need the deadlines sometimes. Mm-hmm. I just need like an external impetus.
Sure. Well, that's something that I really wanted to talk to you about. And before we run out of time, we're already
at the... Oh, sorry. Yeah, yeah.
No, that's okay. But the deadline or the external, I feel like when I think of you, I think of community. Mm-hmm. And you know, I was mentioning that before we were recording where like, I feel like, you know, everybody I know times 1,000, everybody I know knows you somehow. And
times 1,000, like I know 1,000 people you don't know yet that you're going to know.
No, 1,000-fold.
1,000-fold. Okay.
But hearing you talk about sort of, doing the facilitative and the administrative or supportive work or commentary, sort of always having that be a component. And it even has become your job where you're like, you know, your actual day job is supportive of other creative work too.
Yeah.
To what degree does being really integral to creative communities feed or sustain you? Like, is that something that you're seeking out because it feeds you or because it nourishes your practice, your personal practice?
Yeah, it's a good question. Because I have felt like it's taken me a long time to feel that in LA.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that might be, you know, there's a lot of reasons that could be. I am a social person mostly. I think that's a lot of where it, so it's like, just like I get excited. I also like collaborations. Like I really find like things happen in collaborative settings. Even at work, like I feel like that's the case. Like I am, and that's the thing, like certain types of work that are just like very like heads down, like me writing jokes, like I just have to sit by myself and be with myself, and it's not like what I ideally want to do most of the time. I like find, firstly, yeah, it's just interesting to see what other people are doing. I'm interested in other people. A lot of people in LA are doing like varied type of work. I think of like my friend who he was in LA but moved back east recently, like Ethan Swan, who does a record label, used to play in bands, is sort of like a curator, researcher, and he kind of views all those things as being the same mm-hmm. extension of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I was like, oh yeah, I never really thought about like how he thinks about it. But then he just like looking at his website, he's like, I think of these things as all being connected. Maybe I'm the only one who thinks that. And I think like, I did have a lot of thoughts about like, you know, what my thing is, right? Like, and less than, I find like when I'm actually doing a bunch of stuff, I'm not thinking about it as much. It's when I'm like doing less stuff that I'm like, what am I? Like, right. What am I doing? Like, who am I? Like, I'm like, if I'm just doing something, doing a project, I'm pretty project oriented. I like to think about projects. You get this weird, like, kind of like, you know, let down after a project's done sometimes.
Sure. Yeah.
And like, it's like, I hate that. And that would used to just drive me to be like, I got to do another thing.
Right.
Community is important to me. And like I said, there was a time like all my whole social life was these things.
Right.
And now that's less the case. I'm a married guy. Like there's been a pandemic. I don't really can't really socialize. But you know, it's starting to come back. And yeah. It's like been nice to, I've been here like 6-7 years almost. It's like I'm starting to feel like I know people, and like all the people I know from different things, that like my friends from college, my comedy friends, my music mm-hmm. friends, like I'm like, oh, like, yeah, I kind of know enough. I have a community in LA. I still have a kind of like a California wide community, I guess.
Sure.
But it's just like, I'm not in touch with people the way I used to be when I was like, you know, touring all the time and like
right.
that stuff. I don't know if that answers what you're saying. Like you're saying, like, is it part of like being what they say, but an extrovert gets charged by interacting with other
right.
people,
right.
and then they introverts, like they're not energized by that. It like takes right. stuff, it takes out of them. And I'm yeah. definitely like, I get energized by other people.
Right.
And maybe right. being totally by myself drains me.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. And so, so part of that is like seeking out that connection, seeking out those opportunities of collaboration in order to charge up for your own work or for your own practice.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I like, I'm trying to think, like, yeah, like, I know a lot of people that do a lot of different things, right? Like, mm-hmm. and it's always cool to talk to people and then see what they're working on. I'm like, I think there's a lot of people like that now. I mean, I don't think people, maybe some people are so single-minded they just do one thing, but I think most people are getting to like the fact that everyone does do a podcast also, right? No matter what you do, you also talk about it on a podcast,
right?
So
right.
like we're all also promoting ourselves
right
in these ways too, so
right.
I hope I don't sound like I just am like this attention whore. I just like
No.
He just likes to get attention all the time. That's like a big issue. I'm like kind of work on it myself. But
I like how candid you are about the fact that like that's part of why we do this, you know. And that yeah, I mean there are certainly people that don't, there are people that just make work in their bedroom and they have no investment in sharing it with anybody else, and God bless them. And we don't know that
they exist. Know about them yet. We find your Henry Dargers, you know, people right. like that. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I love those people. I love the weirdo people that are just like, oh, you just did this. You did this for yourself. Like my friend is doing you've met my friend. I'm not going to say his name right now, but he made a whole like, basically fan fiction, like very well sound designed, like he's not calling it a podcast. It's like a radio. It's an audio play.
Wow.
And he's doing all the voices. He did the sound design, and he's like, it's fan fiction, so he can't commercially release it anywhere.
Right.
Because it would be copyright violations. He can't make money off of it. It's become, and like, I was just at I was just hanging with a few friends. And we were like, we'd all heard it. He played it for all of us. And we're just like, it's pretty good. He does a good job.
That's but awesome.
He can't, sell it. He can't like commercialize it at all. It was made purely in this, like this fan way. So
will he wind up just giving it away, or won't even share it at all?
Man, I don't know. I gotta talk to him about it. It's like it's also pretty obscure because it is like a fan fiction. It has like to do with the lore of like an IP that he does not own. So, but it's just like, I'm like, honestly, just I'm like, use it as a demo for other stuff you want to do, because like you put, this is what you care about, and you put so much work into it. It's just like, you just need to do a version of that, but with your own thing.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to take up more of your time, but it's great talking.
No, happy to talk to you. Maybe when I start podcasting again, you should come on our podcast and talk about a documentary you want to talk about. Because that's another show.
Yeah.
It's a documentary show. Literally, like, we just took a break, and then like my co-host has like been coughing like for a month.
God.
Not COVID, but so we're gonna try to record before the end of the year. But the change is afoot over there too.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, I hope that all goes well. I hope that you get that going again, and just keep doing what you're doing.
You too, man.
Thanks. It's great to talk.
Yep. Good talking to you. Thanks.
Take care.